Welcome to another episode of the Experts Podcast, the show that brings you leader-hosted interviews with today's most relevant and inspiring leaders. Each episode is dedicated to highlight real leadership principles and influence experts who dedicate their lives to the pursuit of the truth, personal growth, and courageous leadership. And now, here are your hosts, Brad and Matt Smith.
I am really excited to have a good friend of mine on the call. Actually got to meet this gentleman down in Mexico on a National Life Group trip several years ago and had no clue that a friendship was gonna happen. Got to meet him in his office later on down in Dallas. And this guy is just a very well-respected individual in the business, in the financial services industry. Just has a phenomenal heart, one of the most intellectual guys that I know. Has written well over a dozen plus books and has a phenomenal new book just came out hot off the press, Six Secrets to Leveraging Success. And I feel honored to be able to ask him a few questions this evening. Chris Jarvis, are you on the line?
I'm here.
Perfect, my man. I'm excited to have you on. Yeah. Let's just dig straight in because I know everyone's itching to hear more about you and what you've got to offer. I just want to hear initially, you know, what do you do? Let us know a little bit about what you do. How did you come up with the idea of your business, especially with connected to the giraffe in the Jarvis Tower? And what's your company and what do you do? Just to introduce us a little bit.
Hey, guys, I'm Chris Jarvis. As Mike mentioned, I live in Dallas. I'm originally from Providence, Rhode Island. I've lived in Boston. I've lived in L.A. I've lived in Austin, and now I'm in Dallas. And I have I've written 16 books, and I've been in the financial services world for 25 years. I was originally an actuary who worked at headquarters making rates for insurance companies. So I did that. I've started, I think now it's probably 60 different insurance companies that I've started at some point in my career. And I have worked with a number of high net worth clients over my personal career. Anybody from doctors and dentists to lawyers, to a few billionaires. So I've had a pretty good career and have had some ups and downs like many of you. And, it's been a fun road. And I'm spending a lot more of my time. I sold a company a couple of years ago, and I have decided to spend the bulk of my time trying to help other people. And I'm doing sales trainings, I'm doing coaches, I'm doing keynote addresses. And my passion is to help people see paths that they're just not seeing. And my experience, having worked with maybe 2,000 different businesses in my career, is that I've seen a lot of interesting ways to make money and a lot of interesting ways to be successful. And those two things are not necessarily the same, which we'll get to later. And just having seen so many different businesses run different ways, a lot of times I hear how somebody's stuck and you're working really hard. You can't push through to the next level, or you just can't seem to get somebody to move, or there's just some challenge that other people have had. And I'm just fortunate enough that I've seen a lot of those challenges before, and I'm spending a bunch of time doing that. So Mike reached out to me, and he had me speak at one of his conferences once before. And when you asked if I would talk to some of your guys and see if I couldn't share some of the ideas or some of the things that I've done, and I thought, why not? More than happy to do it. So that's a little bit of background. You asked a lot of questions, Mike. I'm sure I didn't get all of them, but that's a little background, and I'm sure you
Yeah, I love the fact that you're so generous with your time. And, you know, guys, I just want you to know, I mean, it didn't take him more than probably a couple of minutes to respond that he was in after he made sure it was okay with his family, which I know is very important to him. So I know you've worked and you continue to work with a lot of highly successful people. How do you go about finding those individuals? And tell us a little bit about that whole experience of how do you uncover some of these opportunities with successful people.
I don't know if it's the fortune or the luck or the, I guess the experience of never having had to cold call, and mostly because, even though I've been successful and I started to give back, I would say early in my career, I was giving back before I had much to give. And what I mean by that is that I, a phrase that I repeat when I'm training folks all the time is that there is no limit to the amount of success you can have when your true motivation is to help other people. And if you want to make a lot of money, there's certainly people who won't be too happy about that. But if you really just want to help folks, that's going to go a long way. And I have had people calling me for years. I had 15,000 doctors respond to articles that I wrote and books that I wrote calling me, asking me for help. And I'm not suggesting that everybody can go out and write a book that a high IQ physician would read and find stimulating and motivating. But the idea of getting content and information out that people want, it only takes three things, I guess four steps for you to make that happen. One is you have to want it to happen. Two, you have to understand or take an interest in finding out what people really want and need. And nobody cares about your products. Nobody cares about the riders. Nobody cares about the underwriting. They have something else that's much more important to them, whatever that might be. They want to get a loan. They want to sleep at night. They want to protect their family. They want to retire. They have something else that's much more interesting than the product. And so you have to ask them find out what they need. And then after you find out what they need, you have to go find the answer so that you find out what people want and then go figure out what the answer is to those questions that they have. And then step four is push it out there one way or another. And people in the financial services world today have a significant advantage over where I was 20 years ago, Mike, and that is I used to write articles for magazines, and I would submit an article today in mid-July. It would get approved in August. It would print in October, and I would start getting calls in November. All of you, I mean, you guys could post something at 9:13 Eastern on social media and have someone contact you by 9:13 Eastern. I mean, you have the ability to, you know, to get things out there. So for me, it became more about focusing on the clients. What do they actually want? And then go give them what they want. And what you have isn't necessarily what they want. So I'd say the biggest problem in the financial services world is that all the carriers and the distributors focus on products. And then they leave it to the agent to figure out how do you take the product knowledge and interpret that into a solution to a problem. And that really, you're putting a lot of pressure on the agent. So there's billions of dollars spent on training on product, but very little time spent on getting to know clients and psychology and understanding what they really need. And that's a huge hole that I'm trying really hard still.
Yeah, I love the fact that you said in the very beginning, you said, what I heard you say anyways, was it's about servant leadership. It's about, you know, really taking the time to hear what it is that they need, not necessarily what it is that you have that you're going to try to offer them. And, you know, I think oftentimes, especially newer agents coming into the business, they get so caught up in, like you said, product and just trying to tell people what it is they have when all they really want to do is have people listen to what they really need and then provide a solution, like you said. So it's such good advice taken from someone that's gone through a whole lot more failures than most of us on the phone anyways. So I'm really excited about this book. I can't say I've read it yet because I haven't, but I am very excited about this book, Six Secrets to Leveraging Success. And I know in that book you take a lot of lessons from many of the people that you've interacted, successful people that you've interacted with. What would you say are some of the most powerful lessons that you've learned from some of these individuals in that book?
Yeah, when I did this book, I really set out to help people on the phone and to help other folks figure out how do you become really successful. And I don't mean just go ahead and hopefully be born, a white male in America and hope that your life is better. I mean, that's a terrible plan because you can't make that happen. But rather, how do the people who are super successful, and by super successful, I mean the top 0.01%. So give me the 1% of the 1%. Don't just give me the 1%. So without getting too mathematical, you know, boring the hell out of everybody in here who's not a mathematician like we are, Mike, it's the top 1% of families in America make $300,000 a year. 90% of families make an average of $37,000 a year. So there's an enormous gap from the 90% to the 1%. And then even inside the 1%, of all those people making over 300,000, 1% of them make over 3 million. So the number gets really big. And what are people doing at that highest end? And what I found was that the people at the highest end, number one, success didn't come because of education, and it didn't come because of your family's income and how much money you grew up with. To get to that 0.1 or 0.01%, those people were different in how they thought. It was mindset. It wasn't income. It wasn't family history. It wasn't where you went to school. It was how you think. And what I mean by that is when you told people you were taking this job, you probably had some people tell you that it was a terrible idea and you shouldn't do this and it was going to be a lot of work and people weren't going to like you and somebody was going to take advantage of you or whatever it was, somebody told you that it wasn't a good idea. And congratulations, you did it anyway. And that's one of the personality traits that's really important for people at the highest end. And I have had the luxury of working with 3 billionaire families and about 200 families that are worth $100 million or more. And every single one of them, whom I interviewed for the book, said that for their great idea, the thing that made them the most money, every single one of them said that when they finally thought of that idea, their friends, their advisors, their kids, their spouses, their parents, and everyone else told them they were crazy. And their response was, "That's great. I don't give a shit what you think." And that was their approach, was that they, what I like to say in some of the meetings is that you have to accept rejection, or you have to be psychotic to be successful. And what I mean by that is, and I don't want to jump to psychology and bore the hell out of everybody on a call late at night on a Sunday, but Maslow's hierarchy, if I'm bringing you guys back to school a little bit, Maslow's hierarchy basically said the first thing you need to do is you need to live. You need air, you need water, you need food. The second thing you need is safety. So you need to not be eaten by a saber-toothed tiger or a lion or an alligator or something else. The third thing is love and belonging, and that you have to fit in. And what I find with the people at the highest end of success is that they don't care if they fit in. So the fact that you have an idea that's different, you're okay with the fact that you're different. And where I find most people limiting their success is that they want to be financial outliers. So when Beverly was doing the call and talking about the people who were really successful, everybody wants to be an outlier, meaning you want to make more than all your friends and colleagues. But are you willing to actually be a social outlier to do it? Are you willing to do things other people won't do? Will you work harder? Will you work differently? Will you just not do the same thing everybody else does? Because if you model your life after Mike Colburn, the best you can possibly do is hope to be something short of Mike Colburn. And I'm not saying that's bad, but you have to, if you're going to really be extraordinarily successful, you've got to do something different. It's how you do it. It's who you do it for. There's something in it. And to be different is how you're going to be really successful. I have a very dear friend. I'm trustee for his kids. We were in a Vistage CEO group together for years. And he started Sport Clips. And when he started Sport Clips, people said, "You're going to do a hair cutting thing for men and boys?" That already exists. It's called a barbershop, and there are 100,000 of them across the country. And everybody told him he was crazy. And he now has 2,000 of them. He sponsors a NASCAR team. He has one of the most amazing car collections I've ever seen. And he's the happiest guy I've ever met. And this is a guy who was an accountant, who had gone to MIT, who's never cut hair in his life, and who happens to be bald, so he doesn't have any hair to cut. So, you know, that's just one example, and I have thousands of them. So for this idea of you have to be different, take the lessons you have, but don't be afraid of being an outlier. If you want to fit in with everybody else, then you're more likely to move back toward that 90% of Americans make $37,000. If you want to be like everybody else, you can. But it's really hard to be one of the guys or one of the gals or just one of, you know, people in the neighborhood who's average but make a lot more money than everybody else. I just don't see it happening. So that was the biggest takeaway was, the dare to be different. Or you can mix as many metaphors and throw as many cliches as everybody you want, but you've got to be willing to go out there and take some chances.
Man, I love that. And I was doing everything I could to not stop you because I want to talk about something that you mentioned. This whole concept of if you want to make a different lifestyle for yourself, you have to think differently than everyone else. How, you know, these individuals that you've met, you know, doesn't matter, income, education wasn't what kind of got them there. They weren't the indicators. I want to talk specifically about what are your thoughts about the thinking process that these individuals have. How do they think? How is it different as it relates to challenges, as it relates to, you know, some of the difficulties that all successful people go through? What has been your kind of experience around that?
Well, I'm going to pivot back and be a little repetitive in that one. I went to business school, so I'm not going to pretend that I did go to college, but I was the first person who went to college, and I got a degree in math, and I was an actuary, so obviously I was a pretty smart guy. I went to a top 10 business school, so I paid my own way. So I'm not the guy who has a high school diploma and found a way to make millions of dollars a year. And I'm just going to tell you this complete rags to riches story. But I did go to school and have a chance to get an education. And I would say that I'm smarter than the average bear. So I had some gifts and things there. So I saw some of that and had a chance to meet some people. And I had a mentor who had taken a couple of companies public and had made hundreds of millions of dollars. And what he told me was when he took over companies, he fired the entire management staff. He wanted nobody working for his company who had worked in that industry before. So for senior management, he fired everybody. And he always brought in senior management from other industries because he said if I wanted to be different in financial planning or financial services or insurance, he would not, if he were running Symmetry, he would not hire people who had worked at Prudential or worked at Primerica or who worked somewhere else. He would take people from food and beverage, dairy, entertainment. He would go to different places because in most industries, people who have a lot of experience have a tendency to say, we've always done it this way, and that doesn't work, and we don't like that. And for any of you who came to this career from another industry, how many times did you hear someone say, well, that's just not, you had an idea, or one of your colleagues had an idea that sounded pretty interesting, and the response was, yeah, we tried that 10 years ago, it just didn't work. And the only way that you innovate is by trying something that everybody else thinks won't work, because if they all thought it would work, they'd already be doing it. So these guys are all willing to try other things to be successful. And then they also know that if you're going to try new things, you're going to make mistakes. So the accepting rejection and the preparing for and welcoming failure, I think it was Thomas Edison, I'm sure I'll butcher the quote, but Thomas Edison said, I never failed. I just found 9,999 ways not to make a light bulb work. So he was the idea that if you're going to do things differently, you have to try. If you're going to be afraid of failure, then you're not taking any chances, and you're not going to accomplish anything. So Tony Robbins is I wouldn't say he's a mentor. I have a number of big time mentors and names you'd recognize, but whom I went and sought out and won them over. They weren't people that I was introduced to. But I love Tony Robbins and a lot of things he does. And one of the quotes that he's used, and I'm not sure if it's an original, is the quality of your life will be directly proportional, meaning the happier you'll be, the more you're willing to. And he said, accept risk and uncertainty. So the more uncertainty you can handle, the happier and more rewarding your life is going to be.
Man, that's deep.
You didn't expect me to talk about underwriting concessions today, did you?
No. This is good. No, this is great. Please don't. You would bore me to death. No, that's so good because you hit on a couple of things. We find even in recruiting individuals into this business, it isn't that you can't be successful if you're, in a similar, in an insurance industry or have previous experience, but you're spot on. I mean, the people that don't have anything, they tend to cross over a whole lot easier. And then when you bring into that, the level of risk and uncertainty that you're willing to take, directly correlates to your happiness. I mean, that's big. I mean, if you guys aren't writing this down, that's a big point right there as it relates to success at large.
And one thing I'm gonna interrupt you interrupting me, which is not because I'm being passive aggressive, but it's because I can honestly tell you guys I was a $500,000, $750,000 a year producer. I owned an RIA that I grew from a registered investment advisory firm that had $5 million of assets when I took it over, and I ran it to $250 million in 4 years, and I was making a lot of money. And I went through a personal divorce, and then when I had no money, my business partners pushed me out because I had no money for attorneys, and I went through a business divorce, and I lost my company. And I went from making $600,000-$800,000 a year, owning a firm that I thought was worth about $8 million, to sleeping on a friend's couch and wondering, is this how people become homeless? And it was pretty scary that that all happened, and that happened 8 years ago, maybe, give or take. And then as I was working my way back, when I clawed back, and then I had some physical issues, and I tore my Achilles and had back surgery, and a bunch of other awful things happened. And I finally did some coaching with a couple of different people, Jack Canfield being one of them, and I just took responsibility for my life and said, I got to look at this, and I got to find the positives in everything. And it may not seem like it now. If you're going through some tough times, you had a big case reverse, you had something not work, you had some stuff at home, you had a divorce or a kid got sick or a parent died or, you know, all those things that happened to all of us, and I've been through all of them. What I can tell you, when you get to a really fantastic stage in your life where you become really, what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know if connected is the right word. But I can look at every single mistake in my life and thing that I was down about, and I can find the lesson now that has helped me be who I am. And every career that I've had has helped me get to this place. And I can't say every single person, you know, I'm not the Dalai Lama, and I'm hardly that enlightened. I can't say every person I met I find a lesson from, but I do a good job at saying there's got to be something in here. Even if it's just, hey, I'm glad I never need to talk to that person again. I'm grateful for that. I mean, there's something about the positivity that comes from realizing this is all part of a, you know, a bigger picture and a bigger journey. And you know, all those things that were really bad, when I thought my business was going to go to hell and I had a couple big hits, I look back and there was nobody from that stage in my life that I wish I had access to now. And the people who have filled in those holes are so much better. Better for me, better people, more fulfilling, more interesting. Just my life is so much better since those people who are in my life who were profitable. And I never would have removed them because it would have been really hard. They remove themselves, and it's a gift. So I really feel like those things that are hard, you change the way you look at them, then those things will change. And it's made a world of difference to me to have that positive attitude about these negatives. It doesn't mean that I'm not happy. It doesn't mean that, I mean, that I'm not angry from time to time. It doesn't mean that I'm not disappointed. It doesn't mean that I don't drop the occasional, you know, WTF when somebody does something completely ridiculous. I mean, I'm not walking around passing out flowers at an airport, but there's something to seeing that these failures will teach you something, and, you know, being out there. I mean, they're not failures, they're just learning, they're just lessons, really. And for me, I find they were all really, really valuable. And it's helped me get there to a place where, I'm really happy and having a great time. And I've got some special offers and things for you guys because you work with Mike and Symmetry and some stuff that I've done and some recordings and sales stuff. And, you know, when you see them, you'll see there's a lot of fun in them and good content, but it's fun too. And I'm just happy to be where I am. And that's because I don't begrudge all that crazy stuff that's going on.
Yeah. So it's so rewarding when you, it's almost like you break free from a prison when you take ownership for every decision in your life. You know, you regain control over your destiny when you say, hey, that's my responsibility, whether it's the right decision or the wrong decision, it's still my decision to make. So let me pivot just a little bit, because I know you're proud of the fact that you do work kind of part-time and you make a good income, and I know you get to go lots of places and go on vacations and carriers fly you all over the place because you're some of the top, you know, at some of those carriers. But tell us a little bit about how that happens. You know, how do you become successful in the financial services industry and happen to do it part-time now. How's that possible? How did you make that transpire?
I don't care about selling insurance, which is part of the reason why I sell a lot of insurance. I like to help people, and I spent a lot of time, and I was a kid who had a math degree. I had an MBA in finance from one of the top 10 schools in the country, and I went and worked for next to nothing with an attorney who was a master in asset protection and estate planning, and I just listened to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of phone calls and meetings so I could understand something. And so the point was I gave a lot of time to my clients and just to hear what they had going on. So there's a phrase we use in my office, and my marketing team really likes to push on it, and that is, don't just listen, hear. So don't just listen to what people say. You have to really hear what they're saying. And the hearing part goes beyond the words. It goes to what's behind it and what do they really want. And so I spent so much time trying to understand what people's needs are. And if you want to sell, doctors insurance, it's actually more important you understand doctors than it is you understand insurance. Because what I find in selling is that there are only three things that somebody needs to know before they can buy from you. And I don't care what your regional and management people tell you. I'm a little opinionated on some of this stuff, or more than a little. But this one particularly because I know I'm right. So this one is when you're selling something to a client, they have to know that you're confident. That's obvious. You have to have the proper licenses and not be a crook, and you assume that you have that. But what's really important is they have to believe that you understand them. More than anything else, you have to take the time to understand their concerns. And if they feel that you are competent and you understand all their challenges and thoughts and worries, whatever those happen to be, then the next thing is they have to trust you. And at that point, it's easy. And I do between $500,000 and $1.5 million a year in commissions, probably some years a little more than that. I might do it in anywhere from 1 to 3 cases a year. And I have not shown a client an illustration in 9 years.
I love that.
because first of all, an illustration is a lie. There's no chance that the policy is going to perform the way the illustration presents, because you can't predict what kind of crediting rates or the day you're going to pay the premium. It's a projection, but it's not truthful. And so, but when the clients feel that, okay, you know, you understand what's important to me, you've explained to me, I trust you because you've explained how the products work, good, bad, and different. You've also told me how you get paid and you disclose commissions, and I feel like I can trust you. So if they think I know the stuff and they trust me and they know that I understand their situation, then what else is there to talk about? Because at that point, they're just trusting me to make that decision. And so
they're really buying you rather than buying the product is what they're doing.
Well, and what's more important, because if they don't like you, the product can't replace you. But if they don't like the product, you can help them find a better product. So I mean, people want people to help them with this. So it really is important that it's much, if any of you watch poker, I know the World Series of Poker just finished yesterday or today, and it was yesterday. And there's Phil Hellmuth is a famous poker player, but he said that there are basically two types of poker players. There's people who play the odds, who play the math, and then there are people who play the players at the table. And they don't pay attention to their cards at all. They pay attention to how are the people playing, and I think this one is full. I think this one has got a great hand. I think this one is bluffing. So you can play the player or you can play the cards. And there's a pretty healthy blend of both. And I would say that in this game, if you want to call it a game, not to minimize it or to make it any negative connotation, in this thing that we do, playing the player is far, far, far more important than playing the cards. And people ask me about, Mike, you and I met at the National Life Conference, and I've sold more National Life insurance than anybody else in the country in the last 5 years, almost each and every year. And they have some fantastic products with living benefits and everything else, and I've never had a conversation about them with anybody ever. Because the clients I'm talking to, that isn't what they're thinking about. These are very wealthy people who aren't worried about paying for those things. These are people who need insurance for certain things. and we just find some products and try and figure out the best underwriting we can get. So it's not about, they may have something that has fantastic benefits, but that's not of interest to them. You know, someone who's buying an executive benefit program for their corporation is not really thinking about the benefits. They're just thinking about their retirement. You know, what is this going to do to get me ready to go so I can retire early and go sail around the world or whatever it happens to be. So for me, a big part of it has been I have focused on knowing my client inside and out. And so if I know my client in whatever niche you choose to be in, whether it's doctors or jewelry owners or real estate agents or school teachers, butcher, baker, candlestick maker, I don't care who it is, but whichever niche you're going to go into, and you have to find one. If you haven't found one, then you're probably a little bit lost in your career. But if you can find a niche or two, then know everything about those people, and that's going to give you an extraordinary advantage, and then you'll be able to help them better. So for me, it's because I know business owners. I've started businesses, sold businesses, been involved in a lot of different transactions. I like that side, and I can talk to the self-made guy as well as anybody. So I just know what some of the issues are, and that makes it easier because people say, "Oh, I talk to you," and it sounds like I'm talking. It doesn't sound like I'm talking to an insurance agent. It sounds like I'm talking to my business consultant. And to a business owner, what's more important, his or her business or his or her insurance policy? So, you know, I enjoy the conversation about the business, and I've had a lot of sales calls where literally 95% of the call is about their business. And on the way out, they say, "Well, aren't we supposed to do some insurance?" I'm like, "Yeah, whenever you get around to it." Like, "Yeah, can you just tell me what I need to do to put that in place?" "Yeah, sure." Because it wasn't an RFP. It was just a necessary evil that they needed to get done to keep their business moving or to keep their loan in place or to give their spouse and kids some protection. You know what I mean? It wasn't about the insurance. Does that answer your question, or is that too?
Yeah, it absolutely does, and I love the perception's reality for everyone, and the perception that you're providing for the client is the reality, and that is that you truly do care about them more than anything else. And I think if we as again, like you said, you have to be confident, you have to you have to at least care for them. And they've got to trust you, but at the end of the day, if you don't have a heart that's willing to serve others and be competent in that area, that's the perception that they need to have of us because it is their reality, if they perceive it. So I'm going to pivot just a tiny bit because I've been itching to, and I appreciate your direction on some of this. We were messaging back and forth on some of these questions that need to be asked, and I took your advice on putting some of these near the end as we build this really, really good conversation back and forth. So I really want to hear from you on if you believe that there is a winning formula for becoming successful, and if you do, what is your winning formula for success?
So loaded question. Yes, I believe there is a formula. And I'm going to throw, I don't know if this is a linear formula, but there are a number of variables and things for you to take into consideration. I do believe that having a desire to help other people is important. I believe you have a lot of people who are on this call who are relatively new to insurance, right? This call is not filled with people who routinely make $10,000 a month selling insurance. Is that fair?
I would say that's fair, yes.
Okay, the majority. So if that's the case, then the one thing I want to share with everybody is it is okay when someone asks a question for you to say, "I don't know, but I will get back to you with that answer." So you don't need to know everything. They don't expect you to know everything. And there's some power to say, "That's a good question. I'll get back to you." What is it about that question that's most important to you? Is it because it's a disability thing? Is it a curiosity thing? Just what is it? Just help understand how they try and understand their questions, why they're asking the questions they're asking and what's on their mind. And then when you say, "I'll get back to you with that," get back to them with that. Like, that's a really good, you want to build trust, tell people you're going to do things and then do them. So it's okay that you don't know everything. I've had a lot of conversations with people, about topics that I didn't know a damn thing about. And it's like, "All right, that's really interesting." But I would ask a lot of questions. So rather than be the genius, someone would ask the question and I'd say, "How did that work?" And you'd be surprised when you ask somebody, tell me about your business, or what else is going on, or how does that work, or how difficult is that, or they say they have a kid with autism and just say, how hard is that to run a business and do that? And you just ask some questions and get some information. And my dad was a successful salesperson, and he taught me a lesson a lot of people have heard, which is you have two ears and one mouth. You should be listening twice as much as you're talking on any call. I guess this one excluded because I'm just babbling on. But the idea, I'm not telling you anything, but the idea of asking a lot of questions and taking a lot of notes and figuring out what is most important to your client at that moment. And if you will take care of what is most important to them at the moment, they will ultimately help take care of what's important to you. So the insurance might be important to you, but I've had clients who were going to buy enormous amounts of insurance. I'm talking, I had a client recently on a over $1 million commission case, but he had an offer to sell his company for $70 million. And immediately I became his merger and acquisition coach, helping him walk through what is it like to interact with a Japanese company, because I'd worked for one. And we just started having that conversation because that was much more important than any insurance. He's thinking about selling his company he's been running for 20 years. And I'm not suggesting that you could pivot necessarily and do that. It was a unique situation for me. But if I couldn't have done that, I would have found the person who could. And so you don't have to be the jack of all trades. But if you find out what's important, then find them the people. I've had a number of clients who have said they just don't love their accountant. Well, I don't go do their tax returns for them, but I go find really good accountants whom I believe will match them on a personality standpoint, and then I find them an accountant. And then you've solved the problem. That's another way to build trust. I think I told Mike this story once before. I have done some really big transactions in my life, as you can imagine, and I've made people and saved people a lot of dough. And I never get a handwritten thank you note for saving somebody $1 million in taxes or helping them sell their company for $50 million. I don't get any thank you notes at all. But when I've introduced people to somebody else who can help them, I've got dozens of handwritten thank you notes for, hey, thanks for introducing me to Mike. He was really helpful. Or thanks for introducing me to this guy. It really helped my son. Or there's something about the act of doing something selflessly creates a different level of trust and connection that you don't get from just doing your job well, if that makes sense. So, you know, so for me, it really comes down to you have to differentiate yourself. And this one usually doesn't go over too well when I have these meetings with sales guys, but it's something you have to hear, which is there are 1.4 million licensed life insurance agents in the United States. And we, I'm including you in the same world that I'm in because we are competing, are selling the same products at the same price to the same people. And yet somehow you have to be different. 1.4 million licensed agents selling the same products at the same price to the same people. And you have to find a way to be different to be successful. And so the fact that the insurance industry has a terrible reputation for being money-driven and not client-focused and not solution-based selling and not all these things, you've got a hell of a low bar to get over. By just being classy, you can really differentiate yourself. So, you know, so my success on this one is I'm not going to say get up early, meditate, you know, eat a bran muffin, don't eat dairy products. Like, you know, that's not my, it's much more generic. My solution is to just help as many people as possible. And you know, as an example, when I sold my company and I was in a non-compete period, I made the decision that for the next year, the only thing I was going to track was that I was going to help 200 people before the year was over. And that was going to be with introductions or advice or something. I was just going to try and help people who needed something. I was just going to ask them what they need and try and find the answer without any thought of how I'm going to make money. And before that year was over, I had dozens of opportunities to do things that were very successful or very profitable because I was just focusing on helping people. And some of those things have opened up into some really interesting, you know, insurance and non-insurance based income opportunities. So, yes, I know I had the ability because I just sold my company, so I had a little bit of money. I get that. But I don't think it should be lost. I don't think those circumstances should minimize the fact that if you really are just trying to help them, you'll get it. And when I mentioned my RIA in the beginning, my investment firm, we would tell clients that our investments were mediocre and that there really isn't any way to make a lot of money picking investments for somebody. There just isn't that way to be. There isn't. It really can't be that different because everybody's buying the same stuff. And the market's going to move up and down, and it's just not going to move that much. And despite that, people gave us their money because we solved other problems for them. So they said, well, I'll just give it to you to keep it simple. So what I'm getting at, the lesson on that is I don't say that to impress you, but I say to impress upon you that we sold a lot of life insurance and a lot of investments by saying these products are ho-hum, they're okay. Like, there's nothing special. I didn't find you the magic product nobody else has. But because we had done some planning or solved some problems for people, they were happy to give us the commodity business and let us get paid. And so that may sound crazy, but it's worked really well.
No, it makes a lot of sense because people really do care more about the relationship and the fact that you care about what they desire and what they want rather than a perfect solution from a product standpoint. So another quick question, and you might be able to answer this quickly. Maybe you've got a quick response back, but how does Chris Jarvis define success? Now that you've gone through, you've been high, you've been low, you've been on your back recovering from multitude injuries, you've been through a divorce, there's been a lot of ups and a lot of downs. So how does Chris Jarvis define success now?
I define success for me as being at peace, being happy with what I'm doing, feeling like I'm in my spot, I'm in my zone, and then I'm doing what I was meant to do. And that's going to sound really, I don't know, ethereal is the right word, or it's going to sound somewhat maybe soft and mushy to some people. But I find that, again, I'll go back to Tony Robbins, who he has a movie on Netflix. It's a documentary called I Am Not Your Guru. I found that to be life-changing. It was another key pivot moment in my life when I watched it. And it's about his Date with Destiny 5-day program. And the interviewer had asked him about, don't you ever get tired? Because he does a 5-day, 16 to 18-hour a day session. The guy's never been seen going to the bathroom or eating, and somehow he makes his way through all these things. And they said, don't you ever get tired? And his response was, and I hope this lights up a few people in the room. What's tiring is when you're pushing against something and you're trying to make something happen. And when you're really trying to make something happen, you're forcing it. It's a lot of work. But when you feel like you're being pulled into your purpose and where you're supposed to be, the closer you get, the more energy you get. And I did a lecture at the business school, UCLA, to a bunch of entrepreneurs who'd started businesses, and it was an hour and a half talk. They ended up going 4 hours of Q&A. And I came back the next day, and I did 16 businesses, like a speed dating. I met with 16 different groups of business owners for 40 minutes each. It went for over 12 hours. And one of my friends said, you must have been exhausted. And I said, I had more energy at the end of that than I did at the beginning. And that just told me that that's where I was meant to be. And so for me with success, if the number of things that you do in your life, if more things in your life are giving you energy and satisfaction than things are draining you, then I think you're successful. So your tank only has so much. If more things in your day fill your tank than empty your tank, then you would think that you end each day with more in the tank than you started. And I would say that's a success.
So I love the growth that I've seen in you since you and I met. And I remember it very vividly. In Los Cabos, when we met, we were talking all the high end. You know, I loved having a mathematical mind, connecting with someone at that level. And I've just seen a different Chris transpire. I think you've gone through some pretty interesting things since then. What has it been, about 2.5 years or so since we first met?
Mm-hmm.
Thereabouts.
Yeah.
And I remember it was a very unique experience for me. I remember you asking me, hey, Mike, if there's anything that I can do, you know, if there's any way I can pour into you, like, no strings attached. I know you, you know, I'm working on writing a book, and I know you've read through it. With no, you know, no strings attached, just trying to help. And I really appreciate that. I value that in you. But I know there's some people on this call that are wondering what habits, routines, what things go on behind the scenes, that have kind of created, this forward momentum thinking that we see now with Chris. And if you care to disclose, like, well, what are some of the most impactful things that you've decided? And I know that some of these are just something that you got to do for you, and I get that. But what are some of the most impactful kind of habits, routines, things that you've put priority on, whether there's monetary gain or not in them, that have really caused you to catapult forward from a success mindset standpoint?
I'm going to go, because I've been playing so much in this weird psychology, you know, almost virtual side of it. I'm going to get into some tactical stuff just because I know you have a lot of relatively new people. The single most important thing I did that made my income go through the roof was, it was clarity and goal setting. And I knew that I hated my job, and I needed to sell my company because it was becoming very much management driven, and it was not innovation and creativity focused. And I knew I needed to get out of that to save my soul. So I had to sell my company, but my company was not big enough. And so I ran a captive management company, so I was creating and managing insurance companies for businesses. And I set a goal of creating 25 new companies, and my best year I'd ever had was 9. And I set a goal of 25 because I didn't feel like doing this work for more than another year or two. So I had to get bigger. And then because I had people to pay for and stuff to do, I also set a goal of getting my personal production back up. And I wanted to get $1 million of personal production. And then I also wanted $1 million of wholesale production that just came from me coaching people who were asking for advice. And everyone who worked for me that year, every meeting we started off with, we said, these are our 3 goals. And here's where we are. And then every single question that came up, we answered, or we asked whenever something came up, a meeting, a conversation, an opportunity, it was, how will this directly impact our 3 goals? Is it going to help? Is it going to hurt? Or don't we know? And if it was something that, if we didn't address it, it was going to hurt us, we would address it. If we knew it would help us, we'd talk about it. If we weren't sure, we would just cross it up the list and wouldn't talk about it. And that 1 year that we had that focus, I went from my 9 new companies to 24. I didn't get to 25, but I came close. And my personal production number went up from, I don't know, it was 300,000 to 400,000 to 1.7 million. And then my wholesale stuff didn't work. So we killed the wholesale work because it was taking up a lot of time. And we went on and sold the other company, and we went from there. So that goal setting stuff was huge, that every day, this is what we're going to do, here's how we're going to do it, is this going to help or hurt me reaching my goal? And when I was working at Jack Canfield, who did Chicken Soup for the Soul and the Success Principles, in 2 of his books, and he wrote the foreword to mine, and I've been very fortunate to meet such a great guy and good mentor. I was at one of his conferences, and he talked about the art of writing down your goal. If you have a goal and you don't tell anybody and you don't write it down and you leave it in your head, there is a 4% chance you will hit that goal. If you just write it down on a sheet of paper and don't even show it to anybody, the odds of you hitting that goal go up to 40%. If you share it with somebody and tell somebody it's your goal, now the odds are over 60. And if you have an accountability partner that you check, who checks in with you regularly, meaning multiple times a week, if not daily, on how you're doing for that goal, it goes up above 70. So this whole idea about having goals and writing them down, the impact on that is extraordinary. I cannot, and I'm a guy who doesn't like rules at all. I really hate rules. I never want to do anything the same way. I don't want to drive to work the same way every day. I like to do things differently. And I am telling you, the power of setting goals and being clear about what those goals are is probably the single most important thing you can do in this career. What am I doing? what, and then in that whole goal setting process, it really is important to ask yourself, well, why are you doing that? What does it bring to you? What, and that goes back to my earlier definition of success, which is it has to be filling your tank, not draining your tank. So once you realize that these things that you're doing will fill your tank, then set numbers, put them up, look at them every day. And I bet you the guys whose names were read off, who were at the top this past month, I don't have, it'd be logistically a nightmare to ask everybody if you set goals, but I bet a number of you took the time to write down to say, I'm going to do 5,000, 6,000, 8,000, 15,000, whatever your number is, and this is what I'm going to do each of these months. For those people who are talking right now who wrote that down already, that these are my goals, of hit these numbers, then they're probably going to be the leaders in the organization in a relatively short period of time. Statistics show that to be true. So for me, the having the goals and saying, what are you going to do, really important. So I would say that that's the first thing for me. And the other habit you would say, Mike, and this is more personal, is that I'm an empath and a caretaker by nature. So the danger of that is that I can get sucked into doing things for other people all the time and not do things for myself. So I take my mornings back. So my morning's about me getting up before anybody gets up, and the dog can want to get up and go for a walk, and it's just too bad because I get up, and that's my time. And I get up and get a water and go out, and I walk, and I walk to the gym, actually, and then work out, and then I walk back. And then I walk back, I usually do a call with somebody that I want to have a call with, sometimes maybe a parent or someone I want to connect with, or I'm talking to a friend who's going through a tough time. But I try and do something in the morning that is mine, so that I don't have that resentment at 3 or 4 o'clock that, oh, I got 5 more things I got to get done. I still don't have time for me, and when's my time going to come? So I just started taking my mornings back. And if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of other people. You just can't wear yourself into the ground. That's my natural would be to do that. And that took me a really, really, really long time to take care of myself. I mean, I'm 47 years old. I've made over $1 million in a year numerous times in my life, and I just bought my first new car because I would never buy anything for myself. So, you know, so it does take a, a sense of, you just have to figure out where you are in the equation and how important are you to the situation, and take care of yourself as if you're an asset.
And Chris, I'm so proud of you. I got the privilege, I haven't written in it yet, but I did get the privilege of seeing what it is that you purchased. And it's a nice vehicle, man. It's a good vehicle. It's a good one to have for your first new vehicle in a while.
1978 Ford Pinto?
Yeah, that's a great one. But I so value your time. Just love your servant leadership. Those two habits that you brought up, I mean, setting goals and making sure that you're taking care of yourself, just the fact that you know yourself well enough to know that that's an area that you've got to attack, or else you won't continue to move towards, you know, happiness and fulfillment and achieve the things that you want to achieve. So, such a big deal. I can't do this call without saying something about promoting you and what it is that you bring to the table. I'm just going to very quickly say, if you guys haven't yet watched the YouTube link that went out in the email, the 10-day transformation with Jack Canfield, talks specifically about a letter that Chris wrote to him and his journey through success, and that was his starting point for success and transformation. From a success standpoint, and everyone on this call, and we'll provide links for it, should go out and purchase his new book and get a chance to read it. So, Chris, I don't know if you have anything else that you want to kind of add to bullet point and to tie this down, but I've been honored to spend some time with you on this call, my friend.
Mike, I am happy to help you, and I haven't met the people on the call, but when I did do a face-to-face for you guys and a number of people, it was one of the two highlights of my career when I did this industry presentation for a bunch of new salespeople, because they were people who were really touched, and there was something about it that was really special. And it's one thing, I get brought into a lot of rooms of guys who make a lot of money and they want to talk technical stuff and they really want to get into how do you do this or what do you do for this company or how do you help this company grow. And those are really technical discussions. But at the end of the day, those are just things about money. And I'm fortunate enough, I guess, to know how to do some of that stuff. But I find the rewards to be, there's people on this call right now who are going to be forced, we're going to come to a crossroads relatively soon, and they're going to make a decision on whether or not they are going to be in the financial services industry or they're going to go into something else. And I don't know how many people out there are truly interested in the success of people whose job it is to help folks handle the complexities and the challenges of dealing with money. And I grew up without it, and I saw how much not having money really makes life miserable for a lot of people. And so if you're a financial advisor, there's a lot, you have the ability to help or hurt a lot of people. And so I would love to look back 20 years from now and say, okay, 100,000 people have taken my course and at some point online, and you know, there's thousands of people who say, I was at that crossroads, and if you hadn't given me some of that advice, then maybe I wouldn't have been able to help these people. So I've done a lot of this. I've been where you guys are. I know it's hard at times, but there's a lot of good habits and a lot of things that you could do that I think could help you change the industry and make a very nice life for yourselves. So, I'm happy to help. And if you decide, Mike, doing this more often is important, or if you decide having people in a room and doing it, workshop at some point would be useful. I try to make things cost effective and valuable to the people who are in the room. So if I can help at some other point, and, for me, it's you spend a lot of time teaching in your life, and teaching people who want to learn is really valuable. And I gave my first convention speech earlier this year, and that was a wonderful honor. And I just enjoy the opportunity. So if you get decent feedback from this and you want to talk about some other way I can help, I'm happy to help. If you get bad feedback, then, blame that on Beverly. But whatever you have, however I can help, guys. I'd like to be a resource. If I can be a resource for all of you, if any of you are still awake, I would be more than happy to try and help. And I just think a lot of people miss out because they're misled on what's important, and they probably could be really successful. And maybe I can just be a piece of that or a positive messenger that helps people figure out how to do this and do it well. So anyway, as I stumble off my soapbox, I will say thank you for listening to me go on and on.
Well, buddy, I really appreciate you. Cannot wait to see you again soon, hopefully soon. And we will definitely be utilizing you, your expertise, your knowledge, and everything that you have to offer. So, guys, I hope you have a phenomenal night. Thank you for being on the call. Thanks for taking the time to just listen. Hopefully you took some phenomenal notes and that you choose to implement some of the things that we talked about so that you can continue to move forward and continue to change your lives in a positive direction. Guys, be blessed. Have a wonderful night, and make it a great one.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Experts, a podcast of leaders for leaders. If you enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website, theexpertspodcast.com, to get the link to the website of today's expert. If you're interested in learning more about the incredible business opportunity with our company, Symmetry Financial Group, find the link to our corporate overview below today's podcast on our website. That's theexpertspodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning into the show.